Lessons in love and violence. Are you ready to learn them? I hope so. We're at the Royal Opera House in London for tonight's Opera on Three. And don't go into this lightly. This new opera from the composer George Benjamin and the writer Martin Crimp will take us to some of the blackest and most pitiless places of the human heart. And yet, as ever with these long-time operatic collaborators, they'll take us to these regions of murder and lust and politics with their trademark brand of musical, literary and aesthetic beauty. This is a chilling but compelling evening in the Opera House, a reversioning of Christopher Marlowe's Elizabethan drama Edward II. And the opera lasts just 90 minutes without an interval, as the corrupt 14th century court will be brought to life down there on Covent Garden stage. The king loves his wife, Isabel, but he also loves the mercenary Gaveston. The courtier Mortimer is obsessed by power and disgusted by the love between Gaveston and the king. So Mortimer is stripped of his powers in the very first scene, and that's the moment that lights the opera's dramatic touch paper in its downward spiral of violence and cruelty. Isabel plots with Mortimer to destroy Gaveston and usurp the king, and in doing so, they deliberately inculcate Edward's son in the ways of ruthless violence as a means to an end. And the lesson is well learned. The opera ends as Edward's son, the new king and still a child, murders Mortimer in a deliberately public display of torture and revenge. This is a drama that doesn't let up from the moment it starts. And you can read more about the plot and see pictures of Katie Mitchell's striking modern dress production on the Radio 3 website. And we're going to hear from composer and writer in just a minute. But the Observer's Fiona Maddox is with me in our voyeuristic eyrie above the orchestra pit, where we'll be able to watch George Benjamin himself conduct the orchestra of the Royal Opera House and his wonderful hand-picked cast, including Stéphane Degout and Barbara Hannigan as the King and Queen. And look, Fiona, this is the third of George Benjamin's operas, and it's the third also with the writer Martin Crimp, after their chamber opera Into the Little Hill and the full-scale Written on Skin, which took the musical world by storm just a few years ago. I mean, there's a lot of expectation and excitement about this new piece, isn't there?
There is, and with good reason. I've managed to see it once already, and it's as if you're being pulled into some sort of murky, acrid cloud chamber from which you are not allowed to escape for 90 minutes, and there's no let up. It's very intense, and it's all about atmosphere. It's not so much about the action itself, although Martin Crimp might say differently, or indeed George Benjamin, but it's about the mood it evokes.
Well, thank you, Fiona. We're going to hear more from you soon, but you've mentioned George and Martin. Well, let's hear from the composer George Benjamin and first the playwright Martin Crimp on his task of adapting Christopher Marlowe's play and the structures that Marlowe used.
A 90-minute play would be about 70 pages of typescript. A 90-minute opera, me writing for George, the typescript will be less than half of that. Compression is part of the deal. So I was inspired by certain dramaturgical strategies that Marlowe invented, which was the compression of time. His original play is in 23 scenes, which feels very modern. I've compressed it into 7, and there are 5 principal characters, whereas in Marlowe's play there were 40 speaking parts.
How have you been surprised by what George has done this time? Because, you know, you go quiet for a bit, write the text, George then goes quiet for a bit longer, writes the music, and then the worlds come together.
The whole thing for me is an unfolding surprise. That's the beauty of it. I would never try and second guess what the music will be. George is such a fine composer that, like a great director, he will discover things in a text that the writer has not foreseen. And that's part of the joy. I don't want to see and I don't want to hear something that I've predicted.
I grope my way at first. I'm so lost, I don't know what to do. I haven't started any of my 3 operas at the beginning. I find a place where the story lets me in, where the feelings at that certain point allow me in, and, as it were, I build out from there.
Martin's words, your music, it's a kind of musical and dramatic vice, you know, it's absolutely the world that does not let go. But we, the characters, you as the conductor, the musicians, we are all, in the best sense, you know, trapped in it, if you like.
The thing that seems to me essential while trying to write an opera is to have intensity, emotion and drama at every single word, every single moment, that you set up an imaginary world in which, like a vortex, people are held. A model for me would be Conrad, the author, Joseph Conrad, whose books are often frighteningly dark, but there's something so compelling about the continuity and about, as it were, not sparing the reader the direction of the narrative and going deeper all the time. So that would be what I would like to try to do, that you're in a sort of maelstrom that's very often gentle or tender, but it holds you continuously. And I would, at least in theory, not like to let you go till the very end.
George Benjamin and Martin Crimp. And it really is a vortex that this piece creates, isn't it, Fiona Maddox, especially through what George Benjamin is doing with his music.
The drama starts with an argument, which is a great place to begin, and it sets up a tension from the word go. And the instrumentation is often a group of instruments relate to a particular character. I mean, it's silly to be specific about it, because anybody listening will hear that George is using a particular group of instruments to set a mood, but it may not always be the same for each character. There are little leitmotifs, there are ensembles. It's a rich work.
Right beneath where we're sitting, sort of actually just above the rest of the orchestra, there's a cymbalum and a couple of harps, and then right at the other end of the orchestra bit, that huge behemoth of the contrabass trombone.
You know, lots of bass instruments, yeah. Lots of bass woodwind, and the cymbalon twanging and clanging in an aggressive, strange manner. Often early on we hear it accompanying or sort of fighting with Mortimer, the most villainous figure on the stage. And it's very effective.
Everything happens very quickly in this opera, as it must, given how compressed the words are and how distilled the music is. But you're sort of in that state of your breath being kind of taken for 90 minutes.
And yet, it's not an opera that shouts. I think, as in life, a lot of the characters are saying very vicious and indeed violent things, but they're saying them in a rather rational way, as you might when you're trying to have an argument with someone, but you're not letting rip. And I think that's part of the skill of the very controlled way that George Benjamin writes and absolutely puts every detail with colour that reflects the mood precisely.
Yeah, I mean, that actually enhances, in a way, the cruelty of what's going on. Precisely the fact that the characters are behaving and expressing themselves rationally, precisely with that forensic care of George Benjamin's music, all so calibrated. I mean, it makes the cruelty actually even more kind of devastating somehow.
George is very particular about the way he almost notates the spoken voice, and you get that in each entry of each singer, and it's very clear to hear, I think. And although there is a murder and there are dangerous actions going on stage, they're not actually what you notice. What you notice is someone having a very controlled argument, an anger or an agony or a distress. It's a drama of the head and the mind.
Fiona, thank you. Look, enjoy, if that's the right word, the rest of the evening here at the Royal Opera House Covent Garden for Lessons in Love and Violence. And you're right about that vocal sound world. It's not just a fine-tuning of the orchestral writing here. It's also about the writing for the voices and indeed the specific singers, because George Benjamin composed the major roles of this opera for the singers who we're going to hear in this world premiere production this evening. The show is directed by Katie Mitchell and designed by Vicky Mortimer here at the Royal Opera House. The baritone Stéphane Degout is the king, while Eula Orentz baritone sings the part of Gaveston and the stranger who kills the king towards the end of the opera. The tenor Peter Hoare is Mortimer, soprano Barbara Hannigan is Isabel the queen, and the tenor Samuel Bowden sings the boy and later the young king, who completes the opera's cycle of violence by ordering the execution of Mortimer in the opera's climactic seventh scene. The gun, though, is wielded by the girl, his sister, a non-singing part that's played tonight by Ocean Barrington-Cook. Other parts, Refugees, a Madman, are taken by Jennifer France, Christina Jabot and Andrew Bjorn Robertson.
It's nothing to do with loving a man.
Yes.
It's love, full stop.
We hear you.
There is poison.
Say not.
The whole human body.
Stop.
And the money.
Always the money.
The money.
Always the human body.
Spend.
We spend.
The money.
Whatever. We like.
Can't
stop.
And people stop.
Love is
unacceptable.
Unacceptable.
Yes. When the price of bread.
Don't go. With the price of bread. Don't block my mind with politics.
You are the king.
They treat me, Mortimer, as a king. Love me, defer to me, defer to my friend, and invite a cabistan. Let us spend money on poetry and music. Or would you rather we preferred for our entertainment human blood and the machinery of a king?
No one is talking about blood.
What?
Do I fight wars
no
for my
one.
Entertainment?
Am I no
one? I fight to protect my people.
I thought I was killed. Who am I, Gaveston? Tell me. King, you are king. Surface of her skin, your politics will leave streaks of my blood. Keep a cat. They say there's an inside person claiming to be king on evidence provided by his cat. Maybe his name is Mortimer.
I am loyal.
What did he say?
He said he's loyal.
He is
not.
My people are starving, but who have I ever harmed?
No one, yourself sometimes.
Not you.
Never.
You see, I am entirely innocent. And have I hurt Gaveston?
Ask Gaveston.
Have I hurt you, Gaveston?
I asked you a question. Answer me. Human body with shame and bitterness. When he questions your right to be king, when his eyes move, look like a sly animus of everything you own, then I want to run at his throat with a steel razor.
None of this is true.
Take Mortimer's property.
None of this.
Raise his house and let his land.
Punish him.
Give him his place. Mortimer is that he has no name. Do not contradict me, Isabel. I say he is nothing.
I say that all I can see where Mortimer once stood is the black space of a collapsing star. Not, I see the ring. Sweetheart,
what is it, Daddy?
Ring, Gaveston, the ring. The boy needs a knife.
No. People, Mortimer. They are frightening my children.
I've traveled, Isabel. I wanted to see my country. Nothing to eat but stone. So I came down to the spring meadow, but in each refuge I found a shepherd with his throat cut and the clean bones of animals. In the I dug for roots and lay for heat in the ash of burned villages. But closer, Isabel, closer to our own city, I found these witches. witnesses, and led them in secret here, Isabel,
why,
to your door. Listen.
What is it? She's he gave our property to Gaveston. I came here with nothing but my body and sold it over and over. Witnesses, I respect each one of you. I am a human being and a mother too. My body is forks like yours. It loves and breaks like a common criminal's with the same.
Woo!
dreams of the average dreamer. Money, property burn away in the acid of pure and inexchangeable value. And what which one will drink it?
Thank you. shine on you, a man with a steel hand, and sleepy smile of an assassin. Yes, I'm a human razor. Like a boy does. The skin's broken where you punched the wall. Why did you punch the wall? Love is a prison. I wanted to see love a man who calls love a prison, who says he would cut my throat. Is torn out of her.
and another child, and this
oh, fire, oh,
storm,
politics,
oh, grass,
oh,
David said, David said,
beautifully they see.
Thank you. I could hold his hand,
my sis,
steady like this, Isabel, over the fidel. And he would greet my eyes while his hand burned and burned over that same flame.
And so kiss
and
toys. said that of Mortimer. And Caviston replied, Mortimer is a dog. His snout is between the queen's legs, and his breath smells of
dogs. I'll buy you a dog. Or maybe you'd like a lion. Would you like to be king and keep lions?
I believe I am a king.
What kind Children! coming.
Oh, I am a bad person. Oh, I have turned to the dark, and the man I chose as brother I could not say.
Self-pity,
right, I could not say. Come to murder me. I
Ah, entertainment. In a deep pit under the earth, a man and a woman murder a king. On the vacant throne, to gratify the people, they installed a woman's child and plan to conceal the murder.
No, where is Mortimer?
But from under the earth echoes out the king his father's agony. The child learns.
I said to you.
And that is dead, my Mortimer. Cut into his body.
No! Stop!
And he has read his name.
No!
The child's gun raised at Mortimer. Lessons of violence well learnt by the king's children, schooled in the dark arts of revenge, assassination, and the exquisite cruelty of their parents and the whole court. The end of George Benjamin's opera, Lessons in Love and Violence, here at the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden. And George Benjamin himself conducted this piece with ferocious, forensic precision. The orchestra of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, led tonight by Sergei Levitin. Such economy of means in that music, but such intensity of impact throughout the whole opera. Seven scenes, 90 minutes, only 90 minutes, but much, much larger than that in its intensity, in its sensuous but icy beauty. It is a vortex, as George Benjamin says, in which we're all consumed, the orchestra, the cast, the audience here. Tumultuous reception from a packed World Opera House, and I'm sure all of you at home listening to us on Opera on Three. And applause for George Benjamin's cast, for Jennifer France, for Christina Jabo, and for Andrew Bjorn Robertson, who sang the roles of the witnesses, the murdered madmen, and the politicians of the court. For Samuel Bowden, who sang the part of the boy and the young king, growing up in his father's image of violence, and not yet, it seems, of love at the end of the opera. Peter Hoare was the Machiavellian Mortimer. Barbara Hannigan was Queen Isabel, who had such an important role also in Benjamin's previous opera, Written on Skin. A huge round of applause for her here at Covent Garden. Yuria Orent, whose Gaveston was full of tenderness and horror throughout Lessons in Love and Violence. And here's Stéphane Daigou, the king ripped apart by love, politics and power. The whole cast taking this ovation at the Royal Opera House. But of course, this opera belongs to George Benjamin himself, composer and conductor tonight, and someone for whom this is the realization of another new phase of his creative output. He's now become such a successful and such a prolific opera composer as Yuria Orent brings him on stage. to what I'm sure is going to be, yes, a wild reception, as it should be. Composer and conductor of Lessons in Love and Violence, George Benjamin, bringing the orchestra of the Royal Opera House to their feet. Such vividly characterised sounds they made, all the way from the contrabass trombone down there, right at the other side of the pit, to the cymbalum. All of those sound rods are these darkest and most pitiless of all emotional lessons that we've learned tonight. But what did we learn? Well, that violence begets violence, and who knows that love might beget love too. Well, the whole story certainly inspired that stark but scintillating beauty of George Benjamin's score. Well, as the cast continues to take this reception from this full Covent Garden, that's it from the Royal Opera House tonight. Time to return you to Broadcasting House and the rest of your evenings listening here on Radio 3.
Thank you, Tom. That was Tom Service. And next Saturday's Opera on 3 is a performance of Verdi's Macbeth from the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, starring soprano Anna Netrebko as Lady Macbeth, with baritone Jelko Lucic and conducted by Antonio Pappano. That starts at 6:30 next Saturday evening here on BBC Radio 3. There's more Opera 2 on the Thursday Opera Matinee. This week, Jonathan Swain celebrates Charles Gounod's 200th birthday on the 17th of June with a broadcast of his final opera, La Tribute de Zamora, a told tale of love, war, heroism and madness in 10th century Spain. That's this coming Thursday at 2 o'clock here on BBC Radio 3. While staying with the birthday boy now, Charles Gounod, and nothing could be further from the heady drama of his opera Faust than his cheerful, melodious Petite Symphonie for 9 wind instruments in B-flat major. Its infectious nonchalance and easy gracefulness has made it a particular favourite with wind players. And though it was written when the composer was 70 years old, has the formal structure of a classical symphony, every one of its 4 movements breathes youthful gaiety and Gallic charm. The second movement, the Adagio, is a lyrical, finely sustained melody, mainly for flute, and the final scherzo, with its bright staccato syncopated theme, is remarkably modern for its time and shows that Gounod was keeping a weather eye on his younger contemporaries. To play Gounod's Petite Symphonie for 9 wind instruments in B-flat major, the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Christopher Hogwood.
Thank you. Thank you.
Charles Gounod's Petite Symphonie for Nine Wind Instruments in B flat major. The St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Christopher Hogwood.
Catch up with the Hay Festival on BBC Radio 3.
I thought you must write the most important story in your life and stop messing about. Tell the truth for a change.
Writers, historians and thinkers, including Simon Armitage, Michael Morpurgo, Bettany Hughes, Afua Hirsch and Rowan Williams.
I don't think it's the business of poetry to provide answers. The business of poetry is to connect.
I decided I want to become a writer instead, and she said, no, well, don't do that. There's no money in that.
With performances from leading chamber musicians.
The music can reach a part of the insides of us that words struggle to reach.
Catch up with Radio 3 at the Hay Festival now on BBC iPlayer Radio.